This is the Skilding Podcast. So I'm here with Maggie Perriton again, who was on the podcast last year. Can't remember when exactly. And the book we did last time was The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which is, I have to say, was a great... I'd actually had it recommended a couple of times and hadn't got around to reading it. So talking to you the last time, Maggie, was fantastic because I actually went and read it then afterwards. Thought that was spot on. It was great. So welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. And it's definitely one of my top favorite, the most favorite in terms of people leadership. Like, that's the top book for me.
And is it just, why is that though? Is it just because of the way it's written? Is it like it's just laid out well, or
the way it's written, it's a great story, but also because it works and it's simple. And I like simple solutions that work because those are the easiest to implement.
Yeah.
So that's why, right? Yeah. It's not complex. It's not like this 100 things that can overwhelm a leader or a manager to think like, oh my God, where do I even start? Or it's very simple, step by step. That's what I love about it. And it's a great story too. Like, you know, it's well written.
Yeah, it's like a lot of things in life, really. Like, that usually the simple solution is the right solution. Like, or like sometimes like that people will say, like, the, you know, the 100 tips for social media dominance or something, and you think, well, really, it's just be interesting and be consistent. You know,
do not, your thing.
Yeah,
be you. Be interesting. Be consistent.
Well, that's it. Like, and somebody actually asked me. So our this podcast is going quite well. It was in the top 10% of globally shared podcasts or something in 2022.
Awesome.
And somebody had said to me, so how do you do it? Like, what's the secret? And I'm like, I don't know. I just show up. Yeah, I just sit here and either talk to myself about a book or I talk to somebody like you. I don't know. I don't put any money into promoting it. I just kind of send it out there on LinkedIn or whatever. And I don't know. Anyway. Today's book, Maggie, Focus. What are we talking about? What are we talking about?
So we are talking about Jack Welch's and Susie Welch's book called Winning. And it's a book I came across because of the executive MBA I've done. So, like, I think a year ago I graduated, but it was like a three-year journey I took on to do an executive MBA through the Jack Welch Management Institute in one of the American universities. And Jack Welch sort of funded that institute, right? So when he retired as the CEO of GE, he wanted to pass on the knowledge and so on that he had and train new leaders. He was super passionate. He passed away actually, I think a year into when I joined. So I got to see him live on Zoom and then, you know, and shortly after, not that long, he passed. So he was super passionate about leadership. Like, you could see that. And I think one of those things to leave his legacy was to fund the institute, work with the university to build a practical MBA program. And that's what attracted it to me, very MBA. So, like, this book was one of the reads we had. And I really actually enjoy it. I really liked it. So that's why I recommend the thing. You know what? That's a good book for managers, for leaders to read. It's very candid, just as Jack is. It's simple language written, but it covers business almost in its entirely. Like, the most important aspect of running a corporation, I wouldn't say, like, it's probably not a small entrepreneurial business type of thing, but more of a corporation with teams and so on. Great book.
So I haven't read this one either, just like I hadn't read the last one, but I am going to read this one. Am I right in saying that the... Just guessing, am I right in saying that the underlying principle is all about the relationships with people? That's what I would guess. It's
there is definitely a lot of that. Yes, here. Okay. And it's all about people. And that's the thing that Jack really believed, understood, and clearly, like, proven with his leadership. But I also agree that it's truly all about people, right? The companies don't exist without people. And sometimes leaders forget that. They focus too much on the bottom line, on the numbers and so on, and forget that behind all of it is the people that drive it.
Yeah.
And without people's work and leading them properly, none of it will happen.
So. Okay, so I think you said it there, but Jack Welch, he was the CEO of GE, which is General Electric. Not everybody would know that. So it's a huge, big company in North America.
So, you know what? I don't remember the years. I should have probably done my homework before, but he's been GE, like, he started as a young engineer. So he was like a chemical engineer or something. I think in GE even, like as a young engineer, and there's a good story. So maybe we'll get to that when we talk about allowing people make mistakes and not, you know, not doing retribution for it, for like honest things and giving people second chances. So he, and then he kind of worked his way up and he became like a head main CEO of entire GE at some point. And he really brought the company from really a fumbling company with many business lines and so on to grow the business value. I don't know how many hundreds percent over the years. So he spent there at least as a CEO. Again, don't quote me on it, 15 years or more, 20. And especially in North America, he's considered like one of the greatest managers, leaders, corporate leaders of time. Because of what he was able to accomplish, how he developed leaders, like people who went through kind of his school, right, and worked in GE, they were always highly sought out leaders and managers by other corporations because they knew those people were really good and could lead.
Yeah.
So that was also like if you became a GE leader and so on, you had a good career and you were sought after because of that.
So they essentially apprenticed underneath Jack Welch, which gave them the accreditation, if you like, to actually go on.
Yes.
That was their proof that they could do it. So let's start at the beginning then. What's let's go through it chapter by chapter or takeaway by takeaway.
So there was a lot of chapters. So I would tell you how the book is structured and then we can chat on it.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm going to say that definitely Jack Welch was a big personality, right? And as you have big personalities, there's a lot of supporters and a lot of haters, right? That's what you do, right? When you accomplish a lot and so on. So there is definitely some controversy around it. And, you know, I always look at those like very successful big people in a way, like learn from them and take what works for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't try to like go into the book with the negative mindset saying, oh, that does not work and this, that, and so on, and let your brain talk you out. Just have an open mind and just learn what works and leave alone what you don't agree with, right? It doesn't mean that you're reading a book, you have to agree 100% with everything the author says. It's just say, hey, if that person was successful, they must have done something right. What can I learn from them?
You know what I do when I read books like that? I take a similar approach. It might sound like it's the opposite, but it's actually a similar approach. I read a book like that, and I read it as if it's gospel. Every single thing that this person's written is 100% true, universally true. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is in the weeks afterwards, it's like I digest it and kind of think, well, do you know what? I don't actually agree with that. Or this, I think I do this quite well, or I don't do that as well as I could. And so I kind of read the book without judgment, I suppose is the way to say it. And I kind of digest it then over, you know, weeks afterwards, you know.
Yeah, that's a great approach. That's a great approach to being a coach, like being a client of a coach too. How can my coach be right? And then if I really don't agree, then I'm not going to take it. But that's a great approach.
Yeah,
So the first main kind of like, parts. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4 main parts, and there were like chapters in each one of them. So the first one is underneath it all. So really there was like foundational things, right? Mission, vision, values, being candid, you know, having differentiation in terms of like how to really keep the best talent, but also, you know, acknowledge the sort of the main people who work and does the get the job done, even though there might not be stars and so on, and giving everybody voice and dignity and things like that.
You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons. And listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you 1/3 of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show.
So then the second part is your company. So if you are a leader, and whether you lead a whole company or whether it's a department or a team, right? Like, what does it mean to be a leader of a team? Like, it's not just about you anymore. So there is like the point that he talks about, which is important, is like when you get promoted from an individual contributor, when you're an individual contributor, it's all about you. Performance, performance, performance of you. But when you become a people leader, it's actually not about you anymore. It's about the team. And sometimes people have a hard time to switch that mindset, right? And that's what also makes or breaks whether you can make it as a leader, team leader, people leader, and so on, or not,
yeah.
Right? So there is that. There's some on hiring, people management, kind of letting go people, right? What, how to properly let go people, change management, crisis management. So there's some like, you know, things. Then there is about competition. So that's more of a strategy part about competition, building strategy, his idea of budgeting kind of thing. Six Sigma, so I don't know how much you go on and out. You want to focus on that. And then the fourth part is your career. So that's really, again, if you're a brand new manager and you want to be promoted, you really want to build your career in corporate world, this is like a good part as well to read and sort of look how the leaders are thinking, right? Like what will help me to progress my career. I need to understand how people above me are thinking and what they're looking at. And that's a great, that's a great part. And then there's some questions next. So that's how the book is structured.
So it really does cover every single
It covers
part
a lot.
Of a business,
Again, it covers a lot. There's like, I don't know how many pages, but they're not, it's not a very small print, but it's about over 360 pages,
wow. Yeah.
360 pages.
Yeah.
But it's simply written. It's well structured in a way when it has some bold points. It had some like captions that give you like their main points off, like it's an easy read,
yeah,
in a way,
yeah,
very easy read.
Interesting, yeah. Okay, so just give me the first part again there. What was that, the first section called?
So the first is underneath it all, right? So he talks here about mission and values. How is that important? And really, this is what drives the culture. So it shouldn't be something you just plaster on the wall, and this is what we're all about, but then we behave differently,
yeah,
in a company.
I read something, I don't know if I read it or heard it years ago, that the values of a company should hurt. That if it's something very generic and easy, like we will be customer focused, like everybody says that,
yeah,
but your value should be, we won't work with people who don't treat our staff well or something like that. Like that, you'll actually turn down,
yeah,
money because they don't fit with your values. So values should... they should hurt from time to time. Like it shouldn't be,
yeah,
shouldn't be easy, you know?
Yeah. Like I believe values are really one of your decision filters, right? So when you have a business, like a business, whether it's a mission, vision, and values, when you truly live them, they act as a decision filter, not only in hiring,
yeah,
who you're actually attracting, right? Who you want to be part of your team, but also, as you say, in doing business, in who you work with,
yeah,
and how you operate and how you behave. And that needs to, like, that's what Jack says, you need to live it, because if you don't, it just creates skepticism and not trust in your own team. And they're like, yeah, great values, but leaders are doing everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
And then people get disengaged,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like, you gotta lead by example. It's like, again, we're talking about children, right? With our children, they do what we show them, not what we tell,
yeah,
them.
Exactly.
That's,
yeah,
how they learn, right?
Yeah.
And that's, as humans, we're wired this way. So we see as humans the incongruency when that happens in the company between, you know, the values that are on the poster somewhere and what's happening really. And sometimes leaders forget, like, you have intelligent people working for you. They know,
yeah,
even if you think they don't,
yeah,
they see. And if you don't acknowledge that, you will have a disengaged workforce.
Yeah, I think that it's that misalignment. I've worked for companies like that previously, like where they say one thing and then do the complete opposite. What's why should I even bother trying to follow what the values are?
And then even think about it, because, you know, it happened to me, and then you have so many conversations about it, because every time it happens, and especially when it affects you or your teams, then you have a conversation. How much time and energy goes from the employees, and especially I think about GE, like thousands of employees, into such conversations and maybe loss of effectiveness and productivity and so on, and creating like a little bit of drama and politics around it, right? As opposed to having people spend all that time and energy working towards the common goals, fully engaged.
Yeah. Joel, I'll give you a random analogy. You know, when you go to a wedding, and sometimes they're great fun, sometimes they're not. And I always think it comes from the bride and the groom, the two people getting married, it comes from them down.
Yeah.
Like if they're relaxed and having fun and enjoying themselves, it trickles down into everyone who's at the party. And I tell you another example, the random one. I used to be a teacher a long time ago, a different life, a secondary school teacher. I used to teach maths and physics. And I went to the UK, to Britain, in Wales, to study. And there was one school I went into. And I went to work placement, and I went for, I think, maybe 10 weeks. And like I hadn't a clue. I was 24, maybe, had no idea about teaching, what it was involved. On my very first day, they had like an assembly for all the new kids. So the first year kids, I think you was that like year 7, maybe, is that when you start high school?
Official high school in Canada, it's like year 8, although year 7 and 8, it's like a middle school that usually happens in high school.
So the kids around 12, say, right? 11, 12-ish. So I was brought in like as a teacher. As far as these kids are concerned, I'm a teacher, right? I'm 24, I haven't a clue what I'm doing. I'm standing there with a stern face on me, you know, and I'm kind of directing kids where to sit down in the hall. And all the teachers are lined up along the sides of the hall. And the principal of the school sweeps in, and she's wearing one of those, you know, like from Harry Potter, you know, like those big long black cloaks.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I'm visualing Hogwarts.
So that's what it was like. So the door's open and she just kind of billows into the room like with this big thing, and two teachers walking behind her like holding clipboards and whatever. Like, so she comes up to the top of the room, and like these kids are like frozen in place going, what is this, you know? And she's kind of talking about what the rules are in this place, and she's talking about the values and what matters and doing what you're told and, you know, respect for each other, all the things you'd expect a principal to say. And I was like the kids. I'd never met her because this is my first day like on placement. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm terrified of this woman. Now, there was about 10 teachers. This school had like maybe 5,000 kids, I think. Something insane.
Huge.
Yeah, no, actually, that's just far too many, maybe 2,000. Whatever it was a massive school.
Okay.
And so there was like 10 teachers, 10 new teachers like me. So after this assembly, we were all to go to her office to meet her and, you know, to introduce herself. And I remember like being terrified, going, I don't know, what is this woman going to be like? And we were brought in, and there was tea and coffee and scones and biscuits and everything. And she could not have been nicer. She's like, oh, hello and welcome. Oh, that's. And she told us then about setting the tone for the school. That's all an act. I just go in and I do that, and we have great fun doing it. Like, but the kids, not that they should be terrified, but they should know where the line is, what will be accepted, what will not be accepted. And it has to look. She had to convey this authority without actually ever saying, I'm the one in charge. She was clearly the one in charge. And I always think about that, like those two things, that being at a wedding and that woman, that principal at the school, that it always comes from the top down. You set that if you ever have to say, I'm in charge, you're not in charge. You should convey it. It should be conveyed. And it's the same thing with the values in a company, that if you have to continuously tell people what the values are, they're not, you're wasting your time. Yeah. They should be conveyed at all times as much as possible. And you should over communicate those things as well. So a long way around to make my point there that yes, I agree with you. The values are important.
That was a great story. I love it. But you're right. You have to live them. So then, yes, communication is important, especially to the new people who don't know them, right? Setting the tone. Yeah. Here is what we believe and so on. So there's, you include that in the hiring process and so on, and then onboarding. But then people need to feel them, because that's what they're going to remember. They're not going to remember if they don't live them, right? Yeah. Then you have to remind them every open. Here's our values, because we don't live them, people forget.
Yeah, you have to over communicate that as well, and tell people and give examples and give people kudos for when they do follow the values, those reward people for it, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, there's nothing wrong in rewarding people for the behavior, because you want to reinforce the behavior that, you know, that you want in the company. Again, we're going back to parenting, the same thing. You want to compliment your kids the way you want them. So they're like, oh, okay, let me do more of that. Yeah. Right. There's nothing wrong, but it's so much more, it flows better. And again, and you don't waste time, energy, and resources of people talking about how your values don't match what you do and all that, and people becoming skeptical and not believing when you actually live them, right? So like, it's both. Yes, you need to communicate. Yes, reinforce it. It's great. But that just enhances living the values. It won't replace living the values and the mission and the vision and all that.
You know, it reminds me of like, what you were saying there about kids, that kids want rules. They want to know where those lines are. They want to know that if I, like, say for example, my two youngest kids, they're allowed outside the front of the house between a particular lamppost and a particular tree. So they're allowed to go, they call it going up and down. Can we go up and down? Mm-hmm. Like, so once they know they're between this pole and that tree, then they're in the happy place. And if they go around the corner, they'll be in trouble. If they go further, they'll be in trouble. Once they know what the rules are, where they should contain themselves, and they're happy. And it's a similar thing in a business, that this will not be tolerated or this will be rewarded.
Yes.
And once that's conveyed and communicated as well, I think you're onto a winner then. It's a good start for a new hire, say, in a company. They know what's expected of them.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, that's a very good point, because I always say that too. Like, as human beings, for our brain, we need some structure, right? We need to know what we're expected, how can we be successful, and so on. There are some people who can handle more kind of loose, looser rules and less structure. And there are some people who need more of this. But nobody will thrive in, like, you can do whatever you want, but then we'll slap you for some things that you didn't know about.
Yeah, exactly.
You get slapped for, right?
Yeah, and that's really stressful in a job. If you're new in a job as well, I don't know, am I doing this right or not? Like, you have to know what does success look like for me in this role, that kind of thing.
Right. And everybody does, because then I know, hey, like, my efforts are creating the result that I was hired for, that I will be rewarded, my team will win, and so on, right? That creates that purpose and really seeing what I'm doing. It's not a waste of time and my energy. It actually brings us to a certain goal. And that's what, as humans, we thrive. We need a purpose, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm doing a bunch of things and I don't even know, then the bit that becomes purposeless, and that's very demotivating.
Yeah.
Right. So that's definitely, like, I think there is this book talks about that.
Okay. So we spent far too long on the very first point. I think this happened the last time as well. Is that another thing?
Another thing. Well, there is so much, right? Yeah. We're not going to go through a whole book, so let's be real.
Give us another point then.
So another point, you know, what I like, what he talks about is that candor, like being really candid with your employees and saying how things are and not really beating around the bush and being clear with the messaging and so on. And that's very important. And there is definitely, again, there is a fine line, and it's a skill that as a leader you need to develop, how to be candid and straightforward without being rude, without being diminishing, or without, you know, and then also through that, giving everybody voice and dignity, being able to speak up and so on, and not have that retribution type of culture where people are scared of making mistake or speaking their mind up because they're scared of losing their job, right? Yeah. They notice something, oh, if I bring this up to my boss, then, you know, perfection is required. Therefore, I'm not going to bring it because I might lose my job. Yeah. But we'll just continue doing things wrong because no, everybody's scared to say, hey, like, we should fix this, yeah. right? Or I have a different opinion than my boss on something, and I'm scared to say that because I'm scared of, you know, losing. So there is that those good points about being candid with the team or with your team members about anything, and also creating that environment of safety where everybody can speak their mind, bring whatever they have to the table, whether it agrees with your point of view or not, whether it brings up certain, you know, improvements or things that are not going well and so on, right? So people can contribute their brains to the game as well and not just be mindless task, you know,
yeah,
performers.
I think a leader's job is not to be liked, it's to be a source of clarity for their team, really. That's mm-hmm. That's what you're looking to be, is clear and like that, again, setting the boundaries and living the values, I suppose. So yeah, it actually reminds me of another book that we covered by, I don't know if you ever read Radical Candor by Kim Scott.
Yes.
So that was another great book where she goes into great detail about what it means to be candid and how to actually go about doing it in a way that is caring, but you're not their best friend kind of thing. Like it's, she said something great in that book. Your job as a leader is not to provide fulfillment for the person, but your job is to help them get to that point of fulfillment. Like can I put you on projects that'll give you the experience to get you to where you want to go? It's not my fault you don't love the job. Like I can do about that. This is the job, right? Which I thought was a really interesting thing, that it can be quite freeing then as well for a leader, because if you think it's your job to make them love their job, you'll never get there. Your job is to find a way to lay out a path for them to follow to get to a job that they feel fulfilled in.
And in this case, so there's two things. In this case, it's just like the leader needs to be, and I believe that, a coach, right? Because a coach's job, it's not to agree with everything the other person said or make them happy or whatever, is to help them get to the result that they want, right? Yeah. So like when you're a leader of a person, help them get to the career or have the career that they want. And that means sometimes telling them things that they need to grow on that they might not like.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because we're not their best friend. Again, going back to the parent, as a parent, you want your children to be kind human beings who know, who are whatever, successful their way and happy. And that sometimes mean you can't have that.
Yeah.
And you did this wrong, and here is how you can improve and so on, even if they don't like you in the moment, even if it doesn't feel comfortable, right? So that's what true candor is saying things or coaching your team member on something that they might not want to hear in the moment, they might not be happy about, but it's in their best interest given to where they're going and what they want to achieve.
Yeah. My 4-year-old this morning, a towel fell off the radiator in the bathroom. And I said, you have to pick that up. He goes, I don't want to pick it up. I said, but you have to pick it up. He goes, but I put it on the radiator. And I said, but it fell. And so I'm standing there going, how are we having this conversation? We're both standing over the towel going, but you have to pick it up. And he just bursts into tears. I was like, listen, that is not the strategy to use here.
Yeah, no, you know, the 4-year-old mind is not reasonable. No. Yeah, the reason kicks in at 6.
Yeah, oh my God. Like, so we stood there until will I help you pick it up? Yeah. So the two of us bent down and both on a hand towel, like just to pick it up and put it on the radiator.
Jesus Christ.
Get your coat on. We have to go. Come on.
Yeah, that's funny.
But sometimes it can sound a bit strange to compare being a leader in a company to being a parent. And it's not meant to be patronizing from my point of view, and I'm sure not yours either. But it's just kind of, it's nudging people onto the right path is ultimately what we're saying. Like, it's just about, I know what the path is because I've either walked it before or I've laid out the path. So it's my job to nudge you onto that and make sure you're kind of following down the path that gets us to the happy place, you know?
Yeah, and help you be successful. And that means sometimes I will need to tell you something you might not enjoy hearing, right? And that's about feedback and helping people grow, right? We don't grow by staying in our comfort zone, doing what we're good at.
Yeah.
And in order to grow, we need to try new things, and we're not always going to nail them, right?
Yeah.
So, but we might also not see what we're doing wrong because we're too close to the problem and we need somebody to tell us, and that's the leader's job.
So be candid. That's it. It's a good one. What else does he say? Give us give us some more.
So I want to share that story because that's like, since we're talking about Jack Welch, that story about him and how he approached like failure and certain things, right?
Yeah.
So as a young, he was a young manager of some chemical plant or whatever. And on his watch, there was an explosion in that plant. Now, nobody got killed or anything, but I don't know the details or don't remember the details, but there was explosion. So he was called in to the head office somewhere in New York, whatever, I don't know where the head office of GE was at the time, or to his boss, wherever his boss is. And he thought like, okay, it's gone, right? I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna fire my ass. And that manager or that leader actually was very understanding, and I don't think they celebrate, but it's like, you know what, things happen and you have to be able to just learn from it, right? And guided him, this is how you learn and this is thing, and moved on.
Yeah.
And just use this as a thing, such a big thing. So that from very early taught him that when people make honest mistakes or just try and it doesn't work, and he applied it to new ventures. So like, you know, when GE was trying to launch a new product or try the, you know, research and development and go into new market or whatever that was, right? Those new ventures, half of them are not going to work out, right? So he used to like put up like celebration parties even for things that fail.
Yeah.
Because he would put the best people, right, to those new ventures to help. And that's what he's talking about the book. If you want a new venture work out, you need to put your best, most entrepreneurial people there and not people who are like not so good and I have spare time, right? Because that's like, it's not going to work right away. So you might as well not do it. But if they fail, because that's just the name of the game, right? Like not everything you start or you try brand new is going to work.
Tell me about it.
You need to reward them. You need to throw a party and reward them for the effort and so on, learn and move on.
Yeah.
Right. And that was what he was doing. So that was also, that's why GMA might have been so successful in certain things, because they had that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
They never lost it. And they didn't discourage their best people by putting them down on top of, you know, sometimes failure. Because when you're ambitious and if something doesn't go well, you're, you know, not happy about it yourself anyway. So if you had your boss putting you down on top of it, saying you didn't do enough or whatever the case might be, when that's not the truth, well, you're not going to stay long.
Yeah, it's an interesting myth that success is a straight line. Like it's all success is your failure way to success. Like you,
and you hit
the nail on the head there by saying you should reward the effort rather than the result. Mm-hmm. The result, obviously, we all would like a good result, but and if somebody is making honest mistakes, then like that's plenty of learning in that for everybody as well.
Yeah.
So, that's a great one. That's real leadership, I think, when they, because it can be tough then, because if you're a leader, you have your own bosses who you have to placate as well, and you have to kind of keep them on side. So you have to protect your team and allow them to make those mistakes with as little impact on the business as possible, obviously. But having that approach is great. It'll actually make your team more resilient, but also more engaged in trying things. Like if they think they have a space where they can actually make mistakes or make mistakes together, I think sooner or later it's gonna go the right way. Like that's a great one. I like that a lot. Let your people fail. Yeah.
Yeah, and as you say, that's why everything needs to come from the top, because as a leader, you need you need to have your back of your boss,
yeah,
right? Because that, and that comes to sharing the same values, right? Because if you share the value, okay, let's try, let's be entrepreneurial and so on, but then you get slapped by your boss because your team tried something and it didn't work out, well, you're not going to try anymore,
yeah,
or not as much, yeah, right? So like it all comes down to everybody has to love the same values and believe in the same things in leadership. So then it trickles down and the company embraces that.
You know, it reminds me of yet another book that we covered called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink, who's a Navy SEAL. And one of the things he talks about, I think it's that book or it could be his other one, but I think it's that one where he talks about managing up and down the chain, that your job is to manage your team, but also then give your superiors what they need. And it kind of reminds me that if you are going to let your team fail, then you need to make sure you're communicating that up the chain as well. That, look, we're going to try something. Yeah. We're not sure it's going to work. Obviously, we want to hit our targets and so on and so forth. But like you over communicate those things as well. So it's interesting how all of these things, they all interconnect, all these ideas in these different books. So, okay, give us another one. This is good. Loving this, Maggie.
Okay, what else we can talk about? So we can talk about, let's see, do you want to talk about a bit of like keeping people or letting people go, or kind of crisis management? I thought that was good. Or what do you want
to talk about? Let's do both of those, keeping people, letting people go, and then crisis management. So
So in terms of keeping and attracting people is, as I said, like he was big, and that's probably like the most controversial part of the book. Like even in our studies, we sort of discussed that. Like he was very, almost in this book, like black and white. And I think on purpose he did that in the book. I don't think that was the case necessarily in his practice fully, or it kind of changed, evolved over the years, where he's like, there needs to be a clear differentiation where you need to be ruthless, not in a sense how you treat the humans, but how you approach it, in really not allowing the low performers, people who are just not on board with mission, vision, and values, who are not on board where the company is going, who are resisting and creating that negativity. You need to let them go. Right? And you need to be very strategic about it. There's always people like that. You need to be looking like, you can't let those people start pooling others who are engaged and so on into that direction, right? So you need to be very, and then, you know, reward your best performers and not get stuck into some maybe corporate procedures where the best performer, oh, you can give people an increase more than 10% once a year or whatever, right? Like they need to be challenged and so on. And also you need to take care of the people who produce. They might not be your A stars, but they're the ones, the core of the company that moves the company forward, that is stable and so on. And you need them as well. And you need to take care of them and so on, right? So like, I don't remember how he broke it up, but he was like, I guess like 20, 70, 10, right? 20, you always have like kind of, again, going back to students, you have A students and B students, and C students or whatever, right? Your 20% top stars, you wanted them to be challenged. You want to help them grow and so on, because those are usually growth driven people. It doesn't mean though, and he's very clear there, that you reward arrogance and, you know, career type of people that will just get to their goals by diminishing others and going like a rat race. That he's very clear on that. This is not it. It's like star people, but team players, fair and very, you know, in terms of integrity and all that, right? So, but you need to help them grow and reward and put them, we talked about it, into challenging projects and so on. So build that career and also take care of the good people, right? And then let go and not keep the people who are just not the right fit, because then what it, if you keep them, A, they usually, and I know that from experience, right? They usually drain a lot of energy of the managers who should be focusing on the people who are actually deserve that focus, right? They, again, they stir, create the politics, and then they influence the culture negatively and so on. And those are people who actually will probably, it's not like they're bad, they might not be just fit for the position or for the company, and they could thrive somewhere else.
Yeah.
And otherwise, they're just like miserable and making everybody around them miserable when they can just be, right? Yeah. Where they can just be released and thrive somewhere else.
I read this thing a while ago, again, probably in a book, I can't remember, but the idea of a leader isn't that they treat everybody equally, but they should treat everybody fairly. And the example that they gave was, imagine like you're supposed to start work at 9 a.m. every day, and one person is consistently late. Like they come in at like 10:15 every day. And another person who's always in on time, but one particular day they come in at like 9:15. Like, should you treat those equally? Like, you treat them both fairly. The fair thing is to ignore the person who's always on time and is late one day. And the fair thing is the person who's always late, they should be reprimanded for that. Like, like that's how it should go. Like, and I guess that's what Jack Welch is saying as well, is that everybody shouldn't be treated equally, because it's again, same with kids. They're all different. Everybody is different and they need different things at different times.
Yeah.
So you treat everybody fairly based on your values of the company, I would guess.
Yes.
And rather than if you try to treat everybody equally, like one rule for everybody, you know, and do you know, actually another thing, it might've been in that book as well. There was this person who was the leader, and they had one of their team complain to them that, you have favorites on this team. And the leader was like, yeah, they do, because they're top performers. And the person kind of taken aback, going, well, that's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say you don't have favorites. But just as quick then, the person who had accused him of having favorites said, well, how do I become one of your favorites? And he said, well, this is what you do. You need to hit your targets.
This is what you do. You can.
Yeah.
I could have all of you as favorites.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
This is what you do. It's going to be my favorite.
Yeah, I thought that was a great kind of real honest way of approaching it, going, yeah, I do have favorites. Yeah. And here's why they're my favorites, because they make my life very easy. You know, that's.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, like, in terms of hiring, I just want to say, like, the little tips that he, you know, says is, like, you know, when you hire people, like, you want to do, he calls it, like, an acid test. So, for me, it's, like, the price of entry, right? Just to, like, consider somebody. And it's really, you know, for him, like, it's simple. It's integrity and intelligence.
Okay.
Meaning, you know, are they not going to break the law and so on? For me, that's, like, you know, basically,
yeah, it's bottom line, kind of, yeah, like that's
any
like,
business.
It's a low bar.
And then intelligence, it doesn't mean that they have to be from Harvard or Shakespeare and so on. It's really ability to learn and having common sense, right? And it's funny, because like I've always, even before I read the book, like that's for me was one of the most important things outside of integrity. Has this person has a common sense? Because if they have common sense, they will learn anything. I can teach them anything.
Yeah, self-awareness, right?
Self-awareness, most of the things. And then, sorry, the third is maturity, right? So that, like, self-awareness, being reasonable and things like that, being emotionally mature.
Being teachable as well is one of the, was a trial
right.
in there. Yeah.
Right, right. And then he has this 4E and 1P framework in terms of hiring. And the 4E is so, like, positive energy. Nobody wants to hang around like people who are negative all the time. Right. And then also like in leaders, like when you hire for leaders, the second is ability to energize other. Right. So that energy, your energy, but you also can energize other. Right. Bring them like towards the common goal. And again, not be the downer. And then, as you say, everything comes from the top. And then the third was having an edge, meaning the courage to make some tough decisions. Yes, no, and sometimes quick, right? In a business, things sometimes move quickly. You can't be taking too long sometimes to make decisions, because that also keeps the team in, you know, we don't know what to do this way or that way. Well, I kind of think that way, but then I get slapped because I didn't get direction and things like that, right? Then fourth is execute. So ability to execute. And I particularly like want to make a point and agree with that, because I've seen that especially like on top more leaders positions, when sometimes people get hired and they have a great vision and they can create strategy, but then their ability to actually execute the big words that they're promising is minus 10.
Yeah.
And then therefore the team suffers and they're not able to execute, right? So like when I was reading that book, I'm like, yes, I'm so glad somebody with larger authority than me recognizes that.
Yeah, well, that's essentially just a bullshitter. It's somebody who's just like to talk a good game, like, and
yeah, but then you see sometimes those people in very prominent positions, right? Yeah. And like, you need to have the ability to execute and know what it takes so you can lead your team. Doesn't mean you know, if you're a VP or whatever, some general manager, you do all the work, but you need to understand it.
Yeah.
Right? To direct and so on. So I love that. And then P was for passion. So being passionate about what they do. So that's, you know, again, those are some great tips. And then, you know, for the sake of time and terms of letting people go, it's all about, again, being candid with people, not turning around the bush, being human, meaning don't fire people over text or some like random things, like have honor to talk to them, right? Now in today's world, it might be through Zoom or whatever, but like talk to them. If you can, and you know, there's laws, and I know in Canada and so on, but if you can tell them why, and it shouldn't be a surprise, right? Because in the part where it's about managing people, when you lead people where and manage, you will give them opportunities to improve if there is something they need to work on. So truly, when you let people go, it should never be a surprise to
them. 100% Right. It's easier said than done. Though some people don't do that well, but that's a big one. They should see it coming.
Give them, you know, if that's what they choose, like give them some money, like whatever, right? Yeah. Like however your laws are, but like those are like, be honest, shouldn't be a surprise. Do it in person. Yeah.
Be human.
You know, be human. Yeah. That's right. So
we'll finish up then on crisis management. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So crisis management, let me just quickly think, because he had some good, tips there. And that's, you know, again, where am I here? No, I lost my mojo in the pages. There. You know, he, of course, has experience by dealing with some large crisis. When you lead a multinational, you know, so many people organization, some big crisis. But here is some good tips, is that the first kind of advice is assume that the problem is worse than it appears. Because when you think about his perspective, when you're a CEO and you have so many other levels below you, people sometimes try to hide.
Yeah, massage the details.
And, you know, cover your CYA, right?
Yeah.
And so on. So as a leader, especially in the top level, you have to assume that it's worse than it appears. Then the second one is assume there are no secrets in the world and that everyone will eventually find everything. Again, especially now in the world of social media, if you're leading a large known organization, don't think that you can like just hide things, right? Then third is assume you and your organization's handling of the crisis will be portrayed in the worst possible light in terms of media coverage and all that.
Yeah.
Right. Just assume nobody will be standing on your side, and no matter whose fault is it, no matter what happened, like you will be the black sheep, and you need to, you know, approach the situation from that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. That assumption. And then the next one is assume that there will be changes in processes and people. Almost no crisis ends without blood on the floor, right? So he's pretty candid.
Yeah, it's
in that
dramatic.
Book. It's pretty funny at times. It's very dramatic. Yeah. That, of course, there will be, if there is, and we're talking here big crisis, right? If something happened, clearly there were some omissions, that whether they were intentional or not, like certain leaders will be like, you need to hold people responsible, right, on the things. And then fifth, assume your organization will survive ultimately stronger for what happened, right? Because you will learn from it, because you will handle it, and because you improve and so on.
So
I thought there was...
Are these assumptions that you make, is that the lens through which you should make your decisions. Is that what his point is? Yeah. So like,
that's what it is. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So if you assume it's worse than it is, you just need to keep asking questions till you get to the truth, kind of
thing.
That's right. Keep digging.
That's right. Yeah. Keep digging. Yes.
Yeah. There are some very good tips, but Jesus, that's, it's a bad day you're having, like, if you have to do all this, like, my life is over, nobody's going to believe me, this is going to be worse than I thought it was. Yeah,
that's definitely, you know, when I think about it, and I think about leaders of, like, you know, big organizations, I'm definitely not jealous of what sometimes they need to deal with, right? And I know we talked about just before this recording about the life of the ride of a lifetime, but Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney. Yeah. So talking about the crisis. So the way that book starts, he is in Shanghai, I believe, opening the park there at the time. I think it was Shanghai in Asia, either Hong Kong or Shanghai. And that's the time where there was this crisis. So there was two crises like at the same time, smaller and bigger. So there was like a day before, there was some shooting in Florida around the Disney property. So they actually track every single employee and where they send. So that for him, like, you know, he always wanted to know, like, maybe our employees were at the bar, right? Like, anybody got killed, what about families and so on. But then the day I think he's supposed to open the park, there was this crisis when a child got killed by an alligator.
I remember that. Yeah.
And he's in Shanghai opening the park, and he talks how he deals with it. Yeah. Like, it's a very, like, I audibled it. So like hearing that, I was like, oh my God. But that's type of the crisis, right? That leaders of larger corporations could potentially deal with.
Yeah.
They don't happen often, right?
Yeah.
But when you're in it, ain't fun. Sure.
Yeah, that is quite the cliffhanger for our next episode. Maggie, we're going to talk about that book, I think, next time, hopefully.
Maybe. Hopefully. Yeah, let me know. Right. I'll buy it. I have it on Audible, but I want to have it in, you know, just like winning in a paper company.
Maggie, tell everyone where they can find you, get in touch if they have any questions or want to work with you.
Yes. So the best way to find me in terms of connect with me and so on is either through my website, which is stairwaytoleadership.com. One word, stairwaytoleadership.com. I'm on LinkedIn as well under my name, Maggie Perrotin. Or if you want to know more about what I'm all about as a coach, I have a podcast. It's called Diamond Effect, and you can find it on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast. My podcast is there as well, Diamond Effect.
Diamond Effect with an E.
Diamond Effect.
Maggie, thanks a million. Like I think probably said this last time as well, but I think I could talk to you all day about this stuff. It's once you get both of us going, I think we're nonstop. And thanks very much, and hopefully get to do this again soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thanks so much for listening.
Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you three interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skillding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.